Welcome to In the Studio with a 21st century perspective on history's greatest rock albums.
Guitar up.
One, two, three.
I'm Redbeard, and today in the studio, it's a story of faith, family, and steely determination. The Heart's biggest seller ever.
Just, you know, in the MTV era that we were in then, at that point, newly MTV, we put on the costumes and it was fun, and we just, you know, got out the flash pots and got the record company, got the budget, got the videos going, and made sort of like a comeback at a time when Heart's career was really flagging. Hi everybody, this is Ann Wilson and Nancy Wilson of Heart in the studio for the 1985 Heart album.
Rolling Stone magazine contributing editor David Wild, in the liner notes to the Essential Heart Best Of, writes, and I quote, "Rarely has a rock group been so fittingly named as Heart. Their music comes from there, and truth is that they've long been a band at the heart of some important changes in our culture. They're surviving representatives of a distant time when people meant what they sang. They've broken down dopey and imaginary barriers by helping to make rock and roll a more co-ed contact sport," end quote. As the 1980s decade dawned, it was more than just the songwriting and imaging of the band Heart that rested squarely on the shoulders of younger guitar-playing sister Nancy and first-to-speak singer Ann Wilson of Heart.
By 81, we were already leading the band. Mm-hmm. We just came out and did it, you know. I think before...
It was more Babe LaStrange.
We were leading the band, but it wasn't openly, you know what I mean? Right. We had to go through all these sort of conniptions to try and make it seem like it was a band, quote unquote, you know, so nobody in the band would get their feelings hurt, when really the band was in a lot of turmoil and we were the only ones that could be unified enough to lead the band. But in 1981 and shortly thereafter, things happened so that we stood alone. And so the physicality of it matched the actuality of it at that point. Thank mm-hmm. goodness, because it was just so hard for a while. Everybody was not knowing what they wanted to do, and everybody's feelings were hurt. And
we should have taken a hint from Fleetwood Mac, you know, and just not had relationships inside of the band. It's just not the easiest way to go.
Well, you know, my relationship with Mike Fisher began before the band got mm-hmm. together, so it was was too late.
Yeah.
You know?
the 1983 album Passion Works with the great song How Can I Refuse? But unfortunately, that album was the second in a row for Heart that failed to sell 500,000 copies, and their U.S. record company chose not to renew their deal. The members of Heart then, lead singer Ann Wilson, lead guitarist and budding vocalist Nancy Wilson, guitarist Howard Leese, bass player Mark Andes, and drummer Denny Carmassi, they were at a career crossroads. Contrast these two journalistic quotes. Ann and Nancy Wilson, the two most influential sisters in rock history. That's one quote. And two, from the All Music Guide review to the 1985 Heart album, this is the opening line, and I quote, "Heart was pretty much considered washed up when they released Heart in 1985. Now,
that's great.
Don't you love that kind of stuff?
Now, see, that's what I wanted to hear you say, Anne.
Yes.
Now, did getting Rolling Stone journalist Cameron Crowe for a brother-in-law help at all in reconciling such idolatry on the one hand and such scrutiny on the other?
Well, yeah, because, you know, you listen to Cameron's point of view and it gives you a big insight into, for instance, people who write for different magazines. A lot of them are stringers, you know, and it's very subjective, and like they might have a hangover and say something like, oh, they were all washed up, weren't they? I sure feel washed up. That's what he's saying inside, you know, to himself. Yeah, it's been really educational and helpful knowing Cameron.
Yeah, because, well, you know, you take everything with a ton of salt, you know, that you read about yourself. And especially having longevity like we've sort of been lucky enough to have, it's called a roller coaster ride. You know, it's going to go up, it's going to go down, it's going to go around the corner and come through the tunnel. And having read a lot of, I mean, we sort of stopped paying attention to a lot of the press stuff at a certain point. Unless it was positive, then we really wanted to see it. But, you know, it's sort of like you have to keep your humor on and your sense of future. You know, you have to keep your hat on about all that stuff.
What about the long-held belief by many of us that there is a misogynistic double standard in much of rock journalism over the last three decades?
No, duh. I mean, there is. And it isn't just about rock. It's about anything where a bunch of uppity women try and step outside their box. Oh, no, let me put that another way. a bunch of uppity women try and, push the envelope. You know, it's just one of those things, though, where it's par for the course, and women just have to keep on shoving to be thought of as good. And sheer numbers, you have to come out with sheer numbers, and so maybe it'll settle down to two or three that are excellent, you know? That's how it's always been, and that's how it's always gonna be, I think.
I've been lonely, I've been waiting for you, I'm pretending, and that's all I can do. The love I'm sending ain't making it through to your heart. You've been hiding, never letting it show.
You want some?
But speaking of, you know, the role, the new role of women, you know, as we step forward into the future, I saw the most interesting thing, that it's mostly young women that we need to bring out to get to vote. It's mostly young women, young single women who aren't going to the polls. And so I think maybe if we appeal to those, you know, women with a thought towards changing things, and the idea that they have a lot of power if they just kind of come forward, that it's kind of exciting, because, you know, women are in the majority here. And if they knew that, if they realize it, then it's a really good thing for our country.
Yeah, I think a lot of young people believe that their vote truly doesn't count. And the only time it doesn't count is when it doesn't get cast.
That's right.
And to change that, you know, just a little bit of footwork.
So make the hair appointment and register to vote.
Yes.
Yeah.
Get a mani-pedi and register to vote.
And register to vote.
To begin to understand the group dynamic in Heart, you must first forget the fact that it's a band led by two women and focus instead on what Sammy Hagar and Michael Anthony taught me about the band Van Halen, where it's, quote, the brother thing. Well, the other brother's vote is already cast. In other words, they'll never break ranks, and you will never be in the family. It's unspoken, but it's clearly understood. Here's Nancy Wilson of Heart.
The thing about it in our band is that not are we only just sisters, but we are the front people. You know, there's the lead singer and then the guitar player who kicks, you know. So we're kind of the focus. And so when you are the focus, there's a lot of you sort of naturally, and we are the songwriters. We're the key main songwriters all these years, the two of us. We always brought the guys in as writers so that everyone would feel democratic about and good about the band. But really, you know, the main thrust of this course has been set by me and Anne. And, you know, even when I was new to the band and Anne was the lead singer and they had the best, you know, cabaret band already going up in Vancouver, BC when I joined, suddenly the nucleus, the whole power structure just clicked into gear when the two of us, who had always planned on being in a band together forever, started doing it together. So, you know, I think a lot of people in other bands that maybe have, you know, siblings in bands, I mean, it might be different in those bands because they aren't maybe necessarily all of them the main songwriters and the focal points either. So, you know, we've always been steering the ship. Everybody always knew it. And being females, we always tried to soften it for everyone around us to make sure they knew we cared about the whole band feeling like a family too, because our style is to make a family out of our work wherever we go, you know? So that doesn't always make it easier for anyone else that's in a band with us, because they just see that there's that sibling thing. It's like, it's automatic. We speak shorthand. We finish each other's sentences, or we don't even have to say anything, and we know what we want. It's how it's worked really well this whole time. And, you know, if somebody who was in the band, say, after about 10 years, which is the average sideman or, you know, lineup for the band, it's at least 10 years, oftentimes they would finally start to feel jealous or like, you know, hey, wait, what about me? It's like, sorry, this is how we run things.
Even if you try, you're banging your head again. Somebody won't let you in. One chance, one love, your chance to let me know. We can go on just running away. If we're staying any longer, we will surely never get away.
recorded live in Seattle with Led Zeppelin's John Paul Jones on mandolin. That's Never, which peaked at number 4. Next, Heart gets an extreme makeover for the MTV generation. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, at Redbeard Rocks on Twitter, and online at inthestudio.net. I'm Redbeard with Nancy and Ann Wilson in the studio for the 5th anniversary of the 5 million plus seller, the 1985 Heart album.
Hi, everybody. This is Ann Wilson.
And Nancy Wilson of Heart in the studio for the 1985 Heart album.
And I'm Redbeard. We're marking the anniversary since the release of Heart's biggest album ever. Nancy Wilson was having a romance with aspiring screenwriter and later director Cameron Crowe, who at the time was almost famous for being the youngest journalist ever to write for Rolling Stone magazine at the tender age of 16. Here's Nancy Wilson of Heart.
He had just finished at that time writing the screenplay from the book of Fast Times at Ridgemont High. So we started dating. We were actually put together by mutual friends, and we had been dating, and I ended up in a little bit part in Fast Times as well as his next one that he directed called Singles was after that. Oh, no, I'm sorry. It was called Wildlife, and he didn't direct it, but he had written that one too. And anyway, I'm getting these confused. It was a long time ago. So really, it was just because I knew Cameron, and we were kind of going out together and stuff, and I realized that I never wanted to be an actor after that, because you have to get up so darn early to get up there and go on the set, be ready in makeup and all that. I don't think the twain shall meet.
Missing the mark, shooting in the dark. I'm
Through 7 studio albums and constant touring, it was thought by at least a few music professionals that Hart had the talent and the fan base on which to build a much broader audience. Nancy Wilson starts, and Wilson joins in.
Right before the Hart, self-titled Hart album, we were without a record company, and we were changing management. We were getting out of our previous management situation, and we met some real gung-ho manager at the time with HK, Trudy Green, and she was like really a funny, great little firecracker of an English woman, and she's like, "All right, you darlings, let's get this all together. Let's get costumes. Let's get hair. Let's get makeup. Let's rock." So we did, and let's get a record company. You know, we just, you know, in the MTV era that we were in then, at that point, newly MTV, we put on the costumes, and it was fun, and we just, you know, got out the flash pots and got the record company, got the budget, got the videos going, and made sort of like a comeback at a time when Hart's career was really flagging, because we'd already used up the allotted 5 to 10 year lifespan of every rock band that ever exists. You know?
And there was a guy at Capitol named Don Grierson, who's mm-hmm. really a great awesome. Mensch, and he really believed in Hart and saw a future for it and signed us to Capitol.
Mm-hmm.
Right then.
So I think, you know, in our case, we were really lucked into some great people that helped us, reinvent. I think it's just a natural progression. A lot of bands only make it for X number of years. And if you're going to make it further, you know, you have to shake it all up again and mm-hmm. start over in a
reinvent.
Way. Yeah.
Don't run too fast like a shot from a gun. Don't jump too high. Knock out the sun. Don't stray too far out on your own. When you finally come knocking, when you finally come knocking, there'll be nobody home. Don't pull too hard like a kite in the wind. You're gonna break string when I reel you in. Don't take off flying all on your own. When you finally come knocking, when you finally come knocking, there'll be nobody home. Nobody home. You say you're feeling locked inside. Stuck inside to stay, wanna fly away. There's really nothing I can do to help you make your play, make you get away. Don't dream too wide and shoot for the moon. Don't ride your heart like a balloon. Is unknown. 'Cause when you finally come knocking, when you finally come knocking, there'll be nobody home. Nobody home. No!
Heart from the 1985 album With Nobody Home, written by Ann and Nancy Wilson. Next, Heart's Gamble pays off with the biggest album in their long storied career. And you'll hear Ann and Nancy Wilson tell the poignant, life-affirming story behind Heart's first number one song. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, at Redbeard Rocks on Twitter, and online at inthestudio.net. I'm Redbeard, in the studio for the anniversary of the 5 million plus seller 1985's Heart album.
Hi, everybody. This is Ann Wilson.
And Nancy Wilson of Heart in the studio for the 1985 Heart album.
And I'm Redbeard. According to Nancy Wilson, Heart's first number one hit came perilously close to never being allowed on the album.
We were gearing up to make the record, and we had our new producer, Ron Nevison, and he came up to Seattle to Ann's house with a big briefcase full of cassette tapes of demo songs. And, you know, we'd written some of our own songs for the album as well, but that was a point where everyone were doing a lot of hit songwriters from LA songs on their rock records. So we were listening to a lot of those songs, and we spent, a whole day listening to, like, not that one. Yes, that's pretty good. And I think maybe What About Love was in that briefcase that day as well. And at the very end of the day, Ron was like, okay, well, I think between the songs you guys have written and some of these other writers' songs that we might have something here, enough stuff to at least go and learn in pre-production. And so he said, yeah, there's one more really interesting song. You know, it's totally not a Heart song at all, but it's got lyrics by Bernie Taupin, and you should just check it out anyway. And he put it on. It was like, you know, I had like one of those moments where I knew that I could sing that song, and I just really fell for it, you know. And so they were like, yeah, right. No, we're not going to do that song. And I was like, no, really, 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 really. Come on. Really, 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 really. We've got to try it. So I kind of like, you know, I kind of like got pushy about it. And then when we were in the studio, we got one of the guys who really was a really cool keyboard programmer to come in and really do honor to the demo, which was a great demo Martin Page and Bernie Taupin had made.
Spare a little candle, save some light for me. Figures up ahead, moving in the trees. White skin in linen, perfume on my wrist. Thank you. kiss, but the prince hides his face from dreams in the mist. These dreams go on when I close my eyes. Every second of the night, I live another life.
So we got in there to do the demo, or to do the basic, or at least to try the song out. It was never agreed upon. As a matter of fact, once we did a little bit of the song, our management, then one of the guys, our main guy at our management company, said, "This song sucks. It'll never do anything. It'll never go anywhere. Don't do that song on your album." And I just kept on pushing because I knew it was beautiful. There was something just special and above and beyond with that one. And when it came time to sing, of course, I had a really bad cold, and so, you know, some of that was kept in the final version. So anyway, it was sort of, you know, through hail and through high water, the song made it onto the album and became the first number one. So then the management and everybody were like, oh, remind us never to...
We always knew it would be...
Nancy continues the story with help from Ann Wilson.
During the time we were making the album, there was a fan named Sharon Hess who... We were in Sausalito working there, and she was a fan who was dying of leukemia. Kind of quickly, she was dying. And her last wish was to come and meet me and meet Anne and see us sing in the studio. So we put her up in a nearby hotel for a few days, and she came and visited us. And she got to come in. We kind of hung out and kind of rocked out with her, and she was really sweetheart, great sense of humor. Mm-hmm. She had a really good head on her shoulders, and so she got to be part of that song, These Dreams, too, and some of the other ones Anne was singing at the time. And it really was pretty special to have somebody like that hanging around in the studio with us.
Yeah.
Because I think, you know, I mean, how can you not feel that, you know?
Really?
And so I think some of the soul that you hear in the vocals on the Heart album might have a lot to do with Sharon Hess. And yeah, so I dedicated These Dreams to her on the record.
You should have seen her face in those days. I mean, she'd sit there in the control room and her eyes would just shine. Mm-hmm. I mean, her face would be all luminous and, you know, she was really sick. She was had all kinds of tubes and stuff attached to her, and she was really on her last legs. But when she was listening to Nancy sing and listening to us work on that song, she just had a different kind of life that was inhabiting her.
Well, there is something about music, you know, that really transcends.
Yeah.
You know, it really brings you somewhere where you probably can't hardly get yourself.
Right.
Physically, you know, it's more than a physical thing. It's beyond. It's beyond the beyond. It's the it of it.
The it of it.
And... anyway, I dedicated These Dreams to Sharon, and I guess, you know, her family told us later after she'd passed away, not that long after she was with us, that she was buried in her favorite Heart t-shirt and everything, and she had her, you know, her favorite Heart stuff in her coffin there.
Wow. That's good.
That's very, very touching, and you did a good, you did a good thing. You did a very good thing.
Well, she did a good thing for us, too.
There you go. There you go. Yeah. Well, Pete Townsend told me, he says, you know, he says, we have these fans tell us all the time that that we're talented and everything. And he says, and we want to tell them back, he says, this isn't talent. This is magic.
Yeah, you know, well said, Pete, because, and he should know. He's been making magic for a long time.
Oh, yeah.
Well,
yeah, I think
go ahead.
Music's bigger than we are. You know, I mean, it comes through us a lot of the time, and when you hear music sometimes in your life, no matter what's happening to you in your world, music can heal you and save you, and give you inner strength and a purpose that it's hard to, you know, always come by mm-hmm. in the world. So, you know, we're really happy we get to do music. We still get to do it. We're lucky, and we're happy to be here doing it.
And as lead singers, guitar players, songwriters, and band leaders now celebrating Heart's fifth decade, Nancy and Big Sister Anne have well earned the right to not go all Beyoncé over fads. Anne Wilson goes first.
I think that there's a lot of cheesecake. There's tons of cheesecake in rock, you know. I mean, there really is.
And pop.
There was then, back then it was just called disco. Now it's called hip-hop, you know, whatever you want to call it. There's lots of women who just look really good, you know, and they just look so cute. And they've got an okay voice, you know, but they mainly make it on their image and stuff. I know what people in the heartland of this country really appreciate is a real honest-to-goodness, soulful woman rocker who's really got it and who really has something to say.
You take your Bonnie Raitt, you know, somebody
Bonnie
like
Raitt.
That, who's not, she's more R&B, of course, but she does have the soul factor and the credibility as a musician and a writer and a singer. You know, she's really good.
And, like, you don't get the feeling that that she has just come out of a session with her image consultant, her hairdresser, and her cosmetologist, and her trainer.
And her fashion coordinator.
You get the feeling that she's just come from her room with her guitar, you know.
Yeah.
It's like much different of a thing. I think that's what I was referring to.
It's authentic.
Yeah.
Thank you.
That's a special in the studio version of Nothing at All, the extended mix from the 5 million plus seller Heart album. I'm Redbeard, back in the studio after this. This is Redbeard in the studio, thanking my guests, Ann Wilson and Nancy. Special thanks to Carol Peters. In the Studio is written and produced by yours truly, Redbeard, for Bearded Fish Productions, copyright 2015. All rights reserved. Transcription, Jane Carpenter Brunet. Theme song, Andy Timmons. For this and many more interviews, visit inthestudio.net.